Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Coming up later, Frank Skinner will be talking tortoises. That's coming up at 9:30. Park date. Hello and welcome to Park Date. Coming to you from the top of Arthur's Seat, Holyrood Park, Edinburgh. I just climbed up here and it is a beautiful sight. Edinburgh spread out in front of me and the rocky mountaintop of Arthur's Seat and some clouds moving across the sky. It really is beautiful. I love doing this walk. It has a special meaning to me. I try and do this walk as often as possible, and I'm remembering back on doing it last year. And it's quite a weirdly emotional kind of place in a way. I saw a couple proposing. Is that how you say it? One was proposing to the other. Which language do I speak again? That was very sweet. Lots of performers do this walk, and I think there's something about walking to the top of Arthur's Seat that kind of correlates quite nicely with a lot of the reason that people are here trying to make it, I guess. Lots of ambition and creativity in the air. It's a great atmosphere. I thought this would be the perfect place to introduce today's episode, which is a great one. You're going to hear from Dane Baptiste, star of Baymus, Sunny D, Live at the Apollo, and numerous other things. He's a great guy, super funny. Worked with Idris Elba and loads of other people as well. I think you're going to enjoy the episode. If you like it, do follow us on socials at Park Date Podcast. If you want to follow my silliness, it's at Christopher Beanland Comedy on Instagram and at Christopher Beanland on TikTok. Yes, it is so. I've started doing stand-up as well, so if you want to come and see me flop, feel free. Enjoy this episode. Thanks, people. Stay safe. Okay, welcome to Princes Street Gardens in Edinburgh. I'm here with Dane Baptiste. Dane, how are you doing today?
I'm good, thank you very much. Chris, how are you?
I'm good, yeah. How are you enjoying Edinburgh so far? It's crazy, you know, isn't it? It's wild.
It's wild because I've got here halfway through, so I'm doing half the run.
Yeah.
So it's been like kind of arriving at like a party late where everyone's already drunk and like drugged up. So it's kind of been trying to get on everyone's level. But yeah, it's been good so far, man. I'm doing kind of like, it's much more of an independent show. I'm doing Free Fringe and yeah. It's been fun, man. I think it's just been a lot less pressure. Just a good crowd so far. And yeah, having fun, man, which I think should be the main part of it.
It should be about having fun. And I think, for me, I always arrive late. I arrive to a party halfway through. I think nice. That's the... Exactly. You don't want to arrive at like 6 p.m. when there's like nothing happening. You want to roll in at 11.
I've been that
like,
guy.
Hey.
Exactly. I've been that guy. My parents used to have a curfew, so I have to be there. Sometimes I get so early, you've got to help the DJ with the records and shit. It's so embarrassing. So yeah, it's been nice coming fashionably late. And I've also, you know, I've had a pretty good career where Edinburgh and comedy is concerned. Yeah. So there's not that I need to prove anything kind of thing. It's just, yeah, just do the comedy, have fun with it. So, yeah, I'm just taking it easy at this point in my career.
That must be a good position to be in as well, because so many people are here, they're like,
look at me. I'm like, I'm trying to be a contender. But yeah, obviously people know you from all the stuff that you've done. Let's take a walk anyway, Dave. We'll talk about that. But yeah, obviously people know you from all the great TV stuff you've done. You know, Baymus and Sunny D and all those things.
Yeah, yeah.
People must love that stuff. We were just mentioning as well, weren't we, before we were chatting about your YouTube show.
Yes.
Which is coming up as well.
Yeah.
Talk to us about that. What's the idea behind that? Is that sort of following on from what you've done before, or are you trying new stuff?
Well, basically what happened was that I have not been at the Fringe for like 5 years. And the way that kind of transpired was my last show was in 2017. I toured that, then had the year off in 2019. 2020, I start my new show, The Chocolate Chip, which is a show where I'm discussing like the complex of anger and like race relations and, you know, how, you know, discrimination makes people angry, and it's still very valid because we live in a time where people will say keep calm and carry on.
Yeah.
And I definitely wanted to rebel against that narrative and be like, no, we've got a lot to worry about as a community.
Absolutely.
And so I started doing a show like in 2020 and began doing a few shows in London, and then I did a run in like Soho Theatre, and it was like the Monday after that weekend we locked down. So then we locked down for so long.
Yeah,
the show didn't make it to Edinburgh that year. And then obviously afterwards, like, it took a while for Edinburgh to come back to be where it is now.
Yeah.
So I basically ended up just releasing it on YouTube.
Yeah.
Because I just wanted to. And also, I guess, you know, the way over that time in the last couple of years, like, social and digital media has taken a big part of comedy and it's been able to break new acts. And I just wanted to make sure that I was, in the game as well. And this, yeah. Continuing to try and introduce myself to a new audience, as well as doing a lot of international travel. But I think because I couldn't make it to Edinburgh, I just wanted to have a show that would still have the eyes of the world on it.
Yeah, definitely. I think the thing, Dane, with those kind of things as well is you can just go and do it, right?
Yeah.
Like, you've done stuff with the BBC. I know people that have done that and people who've pitched loads of things there, and it's quite a convoluted process, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, sometimes you just want to go and make something and put it out there, and that's something that you can do.
Exactly, yeah. And I think that definitely underpins how the industry has changed, where there's a lot of direct-to-customer things that take place now. You've got the introduction of paywalls, and I've seen how beneficial it is for a lot of comedians who have been able to just also reach an untapped market. Not everyone's able to come to like arts festivals. Not everyone has the resources to do so.
Absolutely.
A lot of people, I think, as TV's relevance is beginning to wane as well, people are finding new ways to kind of display their artistry and stuff as well. So I think it's really important. But I think, like you said, the main thing is that it's like you can just produce an aesthetic that is unfiltered, uncensored, and your most rawest and honest version of self without any edits from any exterior parties. And just let the people decide if they want it or not. So I think it's a good place to be in, where we can just go straight to customer with our ideas and get a true measure for how people are receiving it.
Yeah, and how nice is it to have that creative control to be able to say, okay, this is the way I want it to be? Because whatever kind of art form you're doing, there's always this kind of, people saying, oh, do you want to do it this way? Do you want to change this?
Yeah,
or we
definitely
like this, but actually, yeah, being able to say, okay, this is the way I want to have it, that's like a great thing to be able to do, right?
It's a big part of my experience. Like, I think for me, I've had quite a unique journey compared to other comics, because, you know, I struggled in terms of like getting representation. So I had to kind of co-found my own agency, which was UTC at the time. So I essentially went to my manager and was like, well, this is what I want to do with my career, and if you want to be a part, that's cool. She was like, fine. And then that ended up her quitting her normal job to manage me full time. So that was a big part of me holding on to creative control and trying to realise my potential with my own voice.
Yeah.
In the same way that, like, you know, where I struggled to be getting any acting work, I ended up writing my own sitcom in the form of Sunny D, and then again with an entertainment show with like Baymus. So I guess for me, it's always been like I've always wanted to do things my own way and hold on to that creative control. So this again is just another natural progression for me. And I think it's a natural fit, man, just to do it how I want to do it. And I think, you know, It's been good, man. I think it's definitely led to a change in the landscape of Edinburgh as well, in terms of the acts that come out here now to try and realise their potential as well.
Yeah, and that's the kind of thing. People use it as a springboard, don't they? But yeah, I think, you know, a lot of people are here and their dreams are to get a TV show or to make a movie. You've done that, which is really, really cool, really impressive. Obviously, you've got to deal with the kind of the cogs of the machine, and I love the bit in Bamish where you're there with the BBC execs. Is that based on like personal experience?
It's very similar, and I think it's definitely experience for a lot of people where it's not always the thing where you see people like having to very aggressively fight to hold on your creative control. What you find is there's a lot of stakeholders that will try and imprint their ideas onto yours. And you have to find very deft ways of being able to kind of navigate that and almost like make it like it's their idea. But I definitely made a point to kind of satirize that whole process and see so people can
really
see what
funny.
It's like. And I know it's not a unique experience to me, but yeah, man, there's I think it's interesting for people to understand the difference when you transition from show into show business.
Yeah.
Because it's not as straightforward as you'd like it to be.
Just having to avoid some quite menacing looking seagulls there.
They're flying dinosaurs, man. People don't understand that. You're looking at dinosaurs.
They're massive, aren't
they? Yeah, and they have the attitude of dinosaurs. And trust me when I tell you, if they could, a seagull would take your baby. They definitely would.
Once down there, look like they're about to.
The last time I was in Scotland, I remember seeing one like looking at a container from like a kebab shop or something. Put his beak right through the styrofoam. I was like, holy shit! Yeah, they don't
only
play.
In Scotland.
Yeah, they don't play.
I love those videos where it shows like a seagull going into a Tesco's and it like steals a sandwich.
Yeah, it's a cost of living crisis and it's affecting all of us. So
affecting all.
I'm in no opinion to judge any seagull. And if I did, I wouldn't say it to their faces because I know they're going for the eyes. So
yeah, exactly. You got to watch out for them. So you just arrived in Edinburgh. You're looking forward to doing the run here. When you're doing like live comedy, Dane, what are the sort of, you know, if you're going to talk to like a newcomer or something, but people are always asking you for tips and things, aren't they? What's your sort of sage advice to newcomers on the stand up circuit? How do you like encourage people, give them some advice?
I think for me, I always try to encourage new acts to maximise the time they have on stage. I think a lot of the time people see more experienced acts maybe having a drink on stage and maybe taking time as they're kind of being a raconteur.
Yeah.
But I think the key is for you to use the time you have as much as possible because it's a limited time and you want to be able to display as much of your best self as you can.
Mm.
So that would be my advice. The other one would be just be yourself, I think. It sounds like cliche advice, but you know, comedy at especially at a introductory level, is massively saturated, and the only way you can really distinguish yourself from other people is to tell your own personal story rather than telling the story you think people want to hear. I think a lot of the time, people feel guilty of thinking they have to conform to some of the gimmicks they see or whatever they think is in vogue.
Yeah.
That might work on a short-term basis, but if you're really thinking about longevity in your career, the only thing that's going to be a constant in your life is that you are yourself, and so. I'd say stick to that as well, and
that's okay. We'll go back. We'll find another place. We're just talking to some tourists. Find a bench. We'll find a place. But so finding a voice, that's basically expressing your own voice, right?
Yeah, definitely. Telling your own story. I think for most comedians, anyway, like the mindset that kind of precipitates becoming a comedian is that you've had very unique experiences, and the comedy part is finding a way to rationalise that experience, and you shouldn't lose that when you get involved in comedy. It's like, tell your very own unique story, because odds are you'll find an audience that can identify with what you're saying. Everyone will have their own comedy tribe.
Yeah, you talk a bit about what you've done before as well, don't you, Dane? Because you had another life, you were doing other jobs and stuff before you came to comedy.
Mm-hmm.
What was the kind of, I was going to say nail in the coffin, but that's the wrong like image, isn't it?
No, it's probably for the old corporate there was a nail in the coffin.
Well, what was the kind of... So you were saying it was around COVID, right? When you were like,
I think it was part of it. But I think for me, like the thing that made me want to really make the transition into stand-up comedy is a few things. I think one of them was the 2008 the credit crunch.
Oh, the credit crunch. Yeah.
Because that was always my thing, where I was like, you know, I'd love to be a creative, but I know it doesn't really pay the bills.
Yeah.
And that was kind of an eye opener, where I was like, well, nothing in this world is guaranteed, and even people that have worked their whole lives may not have a pension at the end of it, which is very unjust. And so I was like, well, at the very least, you can give it a go, because you know there's no guarantees even if you stick to a normal 9-to-5. I remember reading the autobiography of Malcolm X and a lot of his early experiences. I was like, I can identify with that. We're just having a non-conventional outlook on the world and stuff as well, and obviously seeing the world for what it is. And I think one of the other main things was my dad. So my dad had worked for Ford Plant and he'd been working every day of his life. Yeah, he had perfect attendance.
In Dagenham?
Yeah.
My mum used to work for them.
Yeah, go, yeah. So he used to work there, and he got he had perfect attendance.
Yeah.
And I remember he got a clock, And I remember thinking, I don't think he needs a clock. I think he's pretty good with the punctuality as it is, clearly.
They gave him a clock for how many years was that? Like 50 years or something?
And when you think about the man hours and how much he's put in, it's like, I mean, a car would be nice.
A car,
fucking hell, a discount. That's what you make.
Original Model T.
Or at least like maybe an upgrade to the car he has.
Yeah, exactly.
But, looking at that, I was like, well, you know, there's no guarantee that what you do will be remunerated. And so I was just like, do you know what? It was almost like I kind of had the idea that there are some things in life that we place importance on that you can't take too seriously. And I think, like, working for somebody else is one of them.
Yeah.
And even today, like, I still maintain that. I feel like I'm not under the pretentious idea that as a comic, my life or what I do is more important than someone who is a nurse or a doctor or a teacher. But I'm definitely sensitive to the fact that even those professions are not getting the respect they deserve right now. So I definitely, it inspired me to do something I wanted to do for love, but also to definitely encourage that amongst people as well. And say, and again, I say there's things that you can't necessarily take too seriously, because to the average person with a menial job who works hard every day, like, I think on a moral basis, that should be somewhat rewarding, at least be able to take care of your family. But, you know, living in London, some people won't even have access to housing, healthcare, and I just think these are essential things. I think even if you are someone who considers themselves to be a libertarian or believe in free market capitalism, that's fine. But then surely you understand that tax money bailing out banks or tax money bailing out like other businesses during the pandemic is not really fair unless we're going to be shareholders ourselves as taxpayers. And so, you know, I'm not adverse to commerce, but I think there's a lot of things that can be done to empower people that allow the people that drive commerce and drive the way the world works. And so that's a big part of my platform.
Yeah, and, you know, being a comic, a comedian, you have then that public platform.
Exactly,
you can say things. And one of the things that I think is really great and important about comedy, I mean, I did, like, politics at uni. I was always interested in that stuff. And I thought that comedy is kind of, if this makes sense, like, a way to make people listen in a way, right?
It's absolutely.
You sugar the pill.
It's so absolutely.
Like, okay, this isn't going to be boring. I'm going to make it fun. But I'm also going to tell you,
it's pure politics. Comedy is the most purest form of politics. I think it's one of it has the advantage, A, because in the same way that politics does, you can communicate ideology. I think you just do it in an honest way. I think I've always, to explain the difference between stand-up comedy and politics, is that politics is telling people what they want to hear, whereas comedy is telling people what you think.
Yeah.
And you will work out whether or not they want to hear it. And sometimes they don't, but it's the truth and that needs to be said.
Yeah.
I think that comedy can be much more effective than politics in terms of galvanizing people, sometimes polarizing them, but overall, even when you polarize them, you can still create a discourse where people can see the other point.
Yeah,
because I can talk about things that people might be like, it's ridiculous he said that shit, but I respect the fact that he said it.
Yeah.
And that's why I think comedy is so important. I think even things down to like sitcoms give different demographics insight into the lifestyles of other people they wouldn't normally see. And I think when human beings can find that commonality between us, that can allow for a lot more harmonious existence. I think politics can be a lot more destructive in terms of serving to divide people.
Yeah.
But I think, that comedy can exist as like the opposite force for that. So, I think that comedy is definitely the most honest form of politics. I think it definitely allows, and also I think that it allows people who aren't as politically astute to participate in discourse. Even though we consider ourselves to be a democracy, I think that there is definitely a financial aspect to being able to participate in politics, whether it's if you want to be a part of political assembly and a part of yourself, that requires money. Campaign is also an expensive exercise. And I think if you look at the socioeconomic background of most people involved in politics, it's a very small group of people that are allowed to participate. Whereas comedy allows for the same kind of discourses to talk about the state of society and ideology and how you see things, but allows for a lot more people who may not have the same tools and resources to participate in politics to have that conversation.
Yeah, exactly. Have the conversation.
Yeah.
And then you also get that, I guess you get that feeling, you know, when you're in a room, a comedy room, you're kind of all there together.
Yep.
So there's that communal aspect as well. We kind of live in a society which feels like it's sort of becoming more, I don't know what the word is, but like we're becoming less communal, aren't we? We're becoming a lot more individualized, more divided.
Individualism is a big part of it, which is a strange thing, because like obviously populism has also come to the fore as an ideology nowadays, where I guess we are so used to the individualism that we are more sensitive to what speaks to just us rather than thinking about what is good for us as a group.
Exactly.
And there's a lot of people that are taking advantage of that, I suppose, human insecurity that we have, that we have, the whole question about what about me has been very much manipulated, and so it's caused a massive amount of division, I think, among a lot of people. And yeah, it's concerning, man. I think it's I think that, alongside kind of the state of economics right now, is definitely stunting the ability of art to be able to unite people.
Yeah.
And I think that it's made it so now artists, who, especially in terms of comics and people that speak about their ideas, have had to become a lot more aware of how defensive people are because of populism. Whereas in, historically, as I said, people might be able to say stuff you don't agree with, but you might be like, well, I respect your right to say it. Whereas now people are a lot less likely to indulge other people that offend their sensibilities. And that can make this.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad. And I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
A lot harder than it used to be.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. It's a really interesting point. Yeah, I think you can see those changes kind of happening, can't you?
Yeah. But before, you could just say to somebody, ah, you're crazy, ha 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 ha. Whereas now you're like, well, I don't believe what you're saying, and I'm entitled to my opinion, and you've offended me. Before, like you could be like, I like chips, and people are like, oh, so you got a problem with hash browns? And this is kind of where we are now, whereas just being able to have the larger discussion about potatoes overall.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
Yeah, to make it as simple as I can. wrong country for that, but here you go, I'm going.
On that subject, Dave, one of my favourite bits that you do, which keeps on recurring, is about licorice.
Yeah.
You're always down on licorice. Have you ever had a heckle at a gig where someone's like, actually, I really love it?
A few people have been like, I like licorice. Someone was like, I like salted licorice. I was like, what? What was your diet before? Like straight cigarettes? Like what else could... I mean, yeah. And that's the point as well, is that like, I think for me it's a nice test, because nowadays people are kind of like, if you say you like something, it's like you hate everything else. And that is not how the humans work. Like, I think a lot of that has come from the proliferation of AI, which thinks in very binary terms, because that's the language that computers speak in 0 and 1.
Yeah,
so if you say I like, then people now, because they have learned to try and tailor their discourse along the lines of AI. If I say I don't like licorice, it's like people will be offended and be like, well, I like licorice, so we can't like each other. It's like, it doesn't have to be that way. It's not my dislike of licorice, it's not a condemnation of you, really. But yeah, at the same time, I think I use stuff like that because I think it's important for people to have these discussions, and think that even though we don't like the same things, we can still get along.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but it is disgusting. Like, there's no reason why that why it should even exist. Like, have you had dolly mixtures? It's the shittest one of them all.
It's the worst.
It's so bad. It's like someone put crude oil into a packet of sweets. Like, it's disgusting. Terrible. I won't move on it. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was in Scandinavia recently, and they really love their
lips. They really do. But they don't get a lot of sunlight, so they're going to take anything they can. To someone who lives in a place without a lot of sunlight, like, that's a sugar boost for you.
Yeah.
But I grew up in a post-Haribo world, and so more options are available to me, you know?
Exactly.
Like, you know.
When you were thinking about what you were going to say on off menu, were you like, licorice? Nah.
Yeah. No way. Maybe if someone's like, would you like to wipe your bum after your meal, sir? Well, yeah, give me some licorice, baby. That'll do just fine. I'll wipe my bum with licorice. I don't know if that's a compromise that people are fine with, but I feel like that's some kind of progress.
Is there anything you hate almost as much as licorice? Licorice is your like number one.
I don't like peanuts.
Do you not?
No, I love peanuts. I mean, I don't think I'm like throat closing, yeah. But I'm more tingling allergic.
Right.
But yeah, it's I don't really like it. Also, I'm lactose intolerant, so I'm not great on dairy.
Yeah.
Like, there's something about like the first time I saw a blancmange, I was like, that is an abomination. And someone was like, it's half jelly and half custard. I was like, that sounds terrible.
What even is? That's like a trifle. My granny used to make a trifle.
That's what I mean. And your granny came from a different time where you couldn't pause television and you didn't know if you were going to live or die during the Blitz. And women were expected to stay in the kitchen. It was much harder times when something like blancmange seemed like a treat.
Right.
But we've moved along since
then. Yeah, what are those things? I always think like a blancmange or a trifle. It's like something Henry VIII would eat, isn't it? It's like,
there you go.
Why have we still got that?
And he was like, he was barely able to walk and he created a whole new church so he could leave his wife. You know, you've got to take the context of these people when they come up with these ideas.
Yeah, exactly. That's probably related to consuming blancmange or trifle.
It really is. But there was a time where, you know, gin was safer than water. And that's the same time when people were like, do you know what? I'd have a gelatinous piece of custard. That sounds like a good idea. Someone saw the skin on like a bowl of milk and was like, that should be a dessert.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. That's the thing, you know. But that's the way the kind of the world has moved on. But, you know, again, you have to allow for people to have their preferences, I suppose.
Yeah,
and, you know, for all of the sweets I enjoy, there's people out here that like licorice. And I guess it's more good sweets for me. That's how I see it.
Well, you like your food though, don't you? I do too.
Yeah.
I feel like food's quite a big...
Food is a big thing for me now. Yeah. Like, I definitely am more concerned with my appetite than my sexual appetite. Like, when I was in my 20s with my friends...
We just saw your partner, so we're talking about that.
Oh, yeah, but she knows. Yeah, she knows. Listen, she understands the way to a man's heart is to his stomach. Or the way to any person's heart is through their stomach. It's hard to fall in love when you're starving.
Yeah, true.
But I think I think food is definitely something to people can enjoy. And I think that it's... food is a very communal thing.
Yeah.
I think it's a way that... Again, in the same way that comedy is able to bring people together, I think food has the same effect that, like... I'm always somebody that if I go to a restaurant, I definitely prefer going to restaurants where I can have a lot of sharing plates and stuff as well, so that you can share the dining experience rather than having a plate to myself, because I feel like I can just do that at home.
That's a nice thing to do, isn't it? Some people are very funny about that. They're like, I don't want to share. I'm like, I think it's nice to.
That's the thing with English people. See, like in the EU, Spanish have tapas, the French have hors d'oeuvres, Italians have antipasti. That's why they're part of the EU. Because we don't have those kind of sharing plates.
Right.
That's why we Brexited. If we had a kind of sharing thing outside
that's
of a buffet,
maybe
things would be a bit different.
Maybe things would be different. Yeah, we just want our pie and chips on a plate.
This is it. It's too individualistic.
Yeah,
we need more community things. Other than soup and gruel, British people. We've got to move on from these.
That's actually what I'm
stuff.
Having for my dinner later. Soup and gruel.
Well, up here, yeah. You'll probably get a good gruel here. Yeah. Scotland will do a good gruel.
Are you a good cook, Dave?
I feel like I'm a good cook, but I feel like I try and make stuff that I like.
Yeah.
So I probably have to learn to expand my repertoire a bit. But I have a few dishes. I like I try to make my mum's meal of brown stew chicken, which is like it's shallow fried chicken that's like caramelized.
Yeah.
And then it's put in like a thin like stew, almost like a roux, and it's got like vegetables in it and stuff, and then it's like slow cooked, so like the meat comes off the bone. And then just add like some rice and some vegetables, and that's I really enjoy that. Try to do my best to make that as well. I have a dish that my partner told me about, which is it's linguine with prawns and chili, and then it's like got garlic with a squeeze with lemon and stuff, which is really good.
That's great.
Nice to put together
nice
as well.
Simple.
Yeah, it's nice, but it's really nice as well. A few stir fries here and there as well, like making fried rice. But yeah, I just try to make things that I enjoy and stuff, and see how I can make it as well. But I don't know what I'd say my one speciality is. I just do like number of different things, but I'd say it's probably like also fried chicken. I mean, I love it.
Fried chicken.
I love
classic,
it. And don't worry, listeners, I do both Caribbean and Korean style. Just to, you know, different ways to do it.
Do you put it in buttermilk first?
I don't do buttermilk because of the lactose, but
oh, yeah, of course.
Every now and again,
yeah,
I might do it. But I can either do, sometimes I'll do like my own coating, but then what I also do as well sometimes is you can do like a twice fry and do it with like corn flour and stuff as well, so it just gets that extra crunch.
Yeah.
Some people do it with cornflakes. You're bad people and you need to stop.
Why would you do that?
Right?
That's a very strange choice.
It's a very strange thing. It's cutting corners, I say. And I think, you know, those are two meals at opposite ends of the dining spectrum. And you just need to let them be separate already. Yeah. Like, I said nothing when they came for my chocolate and made that into cornflakes. As a child, when they'd be like, this is a dessert. And I'd be like, it really isn't.
Yeah.
It really is not. If I wanted chocolate in my cereal, I'd have fucking Cocoa Pops.
Did you ever in school have to make those, like, cornflake cakes?
Yeah.
They were, like, the simplest thing that not even a five-year-old could mess up. I remember making
those. And I said, abstain from that. I'd be like, I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not doing that. I'm not playing the recorder. I'm not doing everything else does. Yeah.
Do
I was like, I'm not doing that. You'll be in trouble, Dane. That's fine. How many famous recorder players do you know now?
Right, exactly. Yeah. Why do we have to do that? The recorder is probably the worst musical instrument, isn't it?
It's the way. I mean,
I think I could play Frere Jacques on it or something.
I believe you definitely could.
It was awful.
I mean, but it's because
you want to learn the guitar or something, don't you?
Right. I think with the recorder, I think it's just the sound of it. I think no one's ever like, oh, that's some good recording right there. it's one of these. I think it's one of these things where it's very hard for you to determine if someone is playing it well.
Yeah.
Like, bagpipes are the same.
Yeah.
It's very risky saying this, but I maintain it's like, I don't know the difference between like a good way if someone's playing the bagpipes or a bad way. Because normally...
I think that's the police. Yeah, sorry, yeah.
It's all right.
We're getting arrested for that.
I can see it, but I think it's one of these things where unless you are a real connoisseur,
yeah,
you can't really tell if someone's doing a good job or a bad job.
Yeah. And so, there's quite a lot of random... I don't know if you've seen it. There's quite a lot of random bagpipe players. But you can probably hear in the background as well, there's like some people drumming. You kind of hear these like weird like musical interludes when you go.
People trying to drown out the bagpipes, I think.
This one, there's like 50 bagpipe players. The drummers are like, let's try and make sure you can't hear them.
But no, I think, I mean, that's the.
Can you play anything then?
Instrumentally, not really, you know.
I love music. I can't play anything.
That's all right. I think sometimes it's good to know the difference between being a music fan and being a musician because. Like, I remember, like, when in the early noughties when you had, like, the music production programs like Fruity Loops and Logic. Like, a lot of people became, like, inspired producers.
Everyone's like, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, everyone's like, yeah, I make beats in my room and I didn't want to be that guy. And I think with comedians, it's like, there's a part of comedians where it's like, they aspire to be like rock stars. And I definitely have that sensibility in that, like, I do try to show the same diligence to craft the material as I would if I was, like, a rapper or something. And having distinct lyrics and... subverting language and trying to like play with like the language and stuff to create like new ways of approaching jokes and stuff, and also come up with new terms to add to the vernacular. But like I think I like to just be a healthy spectator and fan of music. Like I love listening to like music based podcasts. Like one of my favorite podcasts is Drink Champs, because like, you know, listening to 90s hip hop and stuff, like hearing like the expanse of their careers and what was behind the influence of some of their art, I'm definitely a fan of that. So I think for me it's like I'm as happy enjoying music and seeing how it's done, and waiting to see what it does as an art form next.
Yeah.
And then but it's always a good inspiration to help me like work on comedy and stuff as well. So I definitely treat comedy and like music, and I want at the end of my career as it exists, I want to have a very healthy body of work and a very good discography, and just have a real big impact on the art form as well, in the same way that musicians endeavour to do so as well.
Yeah, and sometimes you have to concentrate on one thing. Some people think they can do it all, and now I'm thinking about, and this is reminding me of something I wanted to talk about as well, I'm thinking about someone like Idris Elba, who can all these different things, and I love that sketch. Watch that show where the sketch is like, I'm Idris Elba.
Oh, Famalam.
It's like DJ, producer, actor.
God, everything,
And then he goes to... There's one where he goes to like a cancer lab, and the guy's like, he's like, I'm trying to cure cancer, and he just goes, try it. And he's like, move over. I'll try and work out a cure for cancer.
You do get the odd polymath, and I think it's a great thing. And it's not, I don't think that I'm adverse to music. I just want to work out what my correct place is in it, and I want to do it very well.
Exactly.
So even if that involves just executive producing, a good musician and giving them the chance, like I would relish in that opportunity,
Yeah.
Or even if I was like presenting like a music show and just curating good music to present on the show, like I'd be massively into that as well. I guess the way I have the outlet to have a connection to music is that having a podcast where I can get on musicians that I looked up to and stuff like that as well. And like even some of the people I've met along the journey have been massively complimentary. Like Dizzy Rascal's been complimentary about music stuff as well. And this is someone who definitely changed my life in terms of making a creative career something that was a lot more tangible and achievable.
Yeah.
Wiley has also followed me for years and stuff as well.
That's cool.
Jumping Jack Frost, who was the also known as Leviticus, but he was a jungle producer as well, so he followed me. Rodney P as well have always been massively complimentary. And so for me it's like, yeah, just having that connection where musicians recognise my art as well is just about enough.
Have you ever opened up for a musician, or would you ever say, sometimes comedians do that, don't
I definitely would. Whenever if someone gives me an opportunity, I would have to do that. I would have fucking loved to do that shit, man. I definitely would. But until that time, he did invite me to the 20th anniversary of Boy in the Corner, and I was like, and I'm fine dropping those names.
It's not 20 years since Boy in the Corner.
I know,
that
right?
That can't be possible. I know, yeah. That can't be possible.
It is, yeah. It is. But it's amazing to see how far that art form has gone as well. And genuinely inspired me to be like, I hope I can be as positive an influence on comedy as someone like Dizzy Rascal has been to grime and to British music in general. So, yeah. I guess in terms of the musician thing, I want to be like the equivalent there and be the innovator and help to change the landscape of comedy and influence a new generation of comedians. I feel like I'm definitely on the right path, and a lot of the younger comics that are coming up now, or newer comics, are being massively complimentary, man. And it's a massively amazing and humbling experience for people to be like, yeah, I remember watching you growing up as well. So
yeah that's sick. Cool, man. Yeah, if you can influence people, and also I love the idea of like working with people. I think that's always such a good thing.
Definitely.
But go back to Idris. Have you written stuff for Idris, right?
Yeah, so I met Idris Elba in 2018, and I wrote his material for the FIFA Awards.
Right.
So because among the many things that the amazing polymath that Idris Elba is, he was presenting the FIFA Awards, and so yeah, we got to meet up and speak to him, and annoyingly, he's a really good person.
Isn't he lovely?
Yeah, he really is.
I've met him.
So annoying.
I met him once when he was launching his wine brand.
Oh yeah, so fucking.
And he was like, "Well, yeah, I'm just gonna start a champagne house.
Might as well.
Yeah, lovely
might
guy.
As well.
Lovely
he really guy. He is a lovely guy. Actually, and he is actually good childhood friends with a comic, Quincy. So him and Quincy go way back as well, man. Yeah. So Quincy's also introduced me to him as well. But working with him on the FIFA Awards again, it was an amazing thing. And it was amazing but awkward, because once my family found out, some of the comments in the family WhatsApp group were very inappropriate.
I bet they were.
Very inappropriate.
I bet they were.
But yeah, it was a great experience.
Yeah. Cool. Okay, let's stroll back and then we'll finish up. And just tell us a little bit, Dane, about what else you've got planned for the future. Obviously, the YouTube thing.
So the YouTube special is the Chocolate Chip, which is out now. So looking for more people to see that.
Chocolate
doing
Chip,
quite well so far. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
The show Bab Squire that I'm doing at the Fringe now. I'm hoping to tour in 2024.
Mm-hmm.
I will be relaunching my podcast, Dane Back to His Questions, Everything, in September. So we're just trying to elevate that into like a web series, because you know it's been about 6 years doing that podcast. And just the caliber of guests has been so good that we just want to make sure that the standard of the podcast also meets that as well.
A very professional podcast. Unlike this podcast.
Hey, man, this is a great podcast. Listen, the idea is that it's an idea. Yeah. It's about the nuance of your podcast. Like, what does professional mean?
Mix it up a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. That's the main thing. And so for me, the podcast for me was an extension of my comedy, where it's like, there might be a limited time for me to kind of interrogate and dissect certain topics. So the podcast allows me to kind of expand on that. And as I said, it like allows me to kind of tap into other art forms and just see how that creative complex works and stuff as well. And I've just been very fortunate to have some amazing people on the podcast. I said, like, you know, people like Reggie Yates has been on the podcast. We've had Jamelia.
Yeah.
But even people like Dawn Butler, who's like the Labour MP for Brent.
Yeah.
Ed Miliband has been a guest on the podcast and stuff as well.
I was on Ed's podcast. He's a good guy.
He is a good guy.
Yeah. We were talking about swimming.
Yeah, fun.
Like swimming.
Very charismatic man as well.
Yeah.
But so that's coming up as well. I'll be on The Weakest Link as well. I'm going to be on the Christmas edition.
Christmas,
I can't give any, plot spoilers. But
after we switched off, I'm going to ask you about that. What was it like being on Weakest Link?
It was great, man. Obviously, Romesh is presenting now. Romesh has been a great guy.
Yeah.
Okay, another comic like myself who definitely is a massive hip-hop nerd.
Yeah.
But also great to work with him. And it was. I was on with, like, Alex Jones was on with me as well.
Yeah.
Who else was on? God, I can see all their faces in my head. Well, no plot spoilers. I want guys to see it themselves.
Yeah.
But yeah, lots of great people in there.
Were you and Romesh sneaking, like, hip-hop lyrics into the... into the script or
anything? A few plays on words and stuff like that as well, but I think it went over a few people's heads. But no, I had a really good time, man. So doing that as well. I think I'm just going to be doing what I do best. I like to think is just doing some live gigs. I'm doing a lot of international travel, so I will be doing some shows in the Emirates in September. I'm in Sweden doing a tour in October. Ooh. Doing a few shows in Berlin.
I'm surprised you said yes to Sweden, considering how much they like licorice.
Yeah. Well, someone's, again, it's an uncomfortable conversation, but we've got to have it, Chris. We've got to talk to these people. Like, that's what I mean. Like, you know, politics will try and say diplomatically. I'll be like there and I'll be like, hi, everyone.
We need change. To talk about licorice.
Change. Hi, Sweden. Change. Yeah. Yes, you're progressive. Yes, you're an inclusive society. But this has got to stop.
This has got to stop.
This has got to stop. This is crazy. There's so much more for yourself. Look how well you guys can craft furniture. You can make a better confectionery than this. That's how I'm going to open and see how it goes. And I'm going to be like, and also, Eurovision. It's okay. Right. It's not great. No, I probably won't do that. I won't do that. But no, it's a lot of international travel. And just continuing to do what I love. And stay busy.
Amazing. Dame Baptiste, thank you so much for talking. You've enjoyed our
I've had a great time
today.
And a good bit of cardio as well. So it's been
great. We've been having a little walk around. Yeah,
exactly. Right. Like
thanks a lot, Dave. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed that episode of Park Date. There's lots more where that came from, and there'll be more in the future as well. If you enjoyed it, please leave a review, good or bad. Make them funny. I'll be reading out the best ones, and there'll be a prize for the one that makes me laugh the most. Name check some trees in your reviews and leave them wherever you get your podcast from. Check out our website, parkdate.co.uk. And if you see me walking around in the park, come and say hello. I think that was the sound of someone sneezing. Yes. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Coming up on the next edition of Park Date, we'll be in Scotland again, meeting the man whose house is made of pastry. See you soon.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.